Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
I'm Ted Lasso. This is Coach Beard here.
And here's the seventh inning stretch from Brendan Hunt, actor and Chicago native.
A one, a two, a three.
You know, there's some soccer, but some people call it football. I got involved in Ted Lasso from the original commercials that we did for NBC Sports. I've known Jason for a really long time. We've worked together on things, and actually it was a bad news, good news phone call. I had done a scene in We're the Millers, my first ever proper scene in a film, and it was with him, and I was being edited at the time. And he called me to say, your scene's been cut out of the movie, which is a bummer, but what are you gonna do? But then he was like, but I got this soccer thing.
Boots. They call cleats boots.
Well, I thought you said that the trunk of a car was a boot.
Also a boot.
Hold on. If I were to get fired from a job where I'm putting cleats in the trunk of my car.
You got the boot for putting boots in the boot.
Four Emmy nominations and then 20 Emmy nominations total.
You know, I mean, I'm just sitting there with my Cheerios. You know, my kid woke me up. He's 5 months old. I was kind of hoping to sleep through it. And then I was like, oh, that's pretty good. You know, but it's fun. And we're all very grateful.
You're in Kansas, but those were kids. And these are professionals. And winning does matter to them. And it matters to me.
For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out of the ball game.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's how you bring in a guest.
Amen.
Brendan Hunt, who is on Twitter at Brendan Hunting, actor, comedian, screenwriter. Coach Beard on Ted Lasso is with us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Brendan. How are you?
Good. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
And you're kind enough to join us on Twitch. You went above and beyond for this. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm not going to lie. Just got back to L.A. yesterday. And apparently my seven-month-old has had his first jet lag because he woke up about 3 o'clock, and that was fun. And I very nearly slept through this. I woke up about 90 seconds ago. I will try to have my wits about me the best I can.
Wow. Well, that is in true Richmond AFC spirit, taking one for the team. So we really do appreciate it. Let's start with what just happened. You were in Chicago. It was really fun to see you sing the seventh inning stretch, talk to Marquee Network, Taylor McGregor as well. And one of the notes that I picked up from that was that you had a job at Wrigley and you did what any red-blooded sports fan would do. I understand that you tried to watch some batting practice and that's where things went south.
Yeah. I mean, it was the most natural, organic thing in the world. You know, you get there early at the day game, come out of the, you know, center field holding pen or whatever, and you know, like you're behind third base today or something, and walking behind, you know, that aisle they had, you know, up behind left field, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's batting practice, there's no one here, the whole of the bleachers is here for me to sit and enjoy. So I sat down, watched some batting practice. I think I might have even like picked up a ball, and they're like, wow, that was really fun, wow. And then I walk along, get to my post, and my manager, whoever comes running out, you cannot watch batting practice. I had committed some horrible crime. And yeah, that was the beginning of the end. But I actually remember the exact moment I decided I had to quit, which was I'm serving hot dogs at my stand, and a guy who I had lived with in college for the first 2 weeks of college at Illinois State, in like some misbegotten, overcrowded, there's been a bureaucratic mistake, six people in one room situation for 2 weeks. And he buys a hot dog from me, and he's like, oh, my God, Brendan Hunt, wow. And when he leaves, he meant no harm. But when he leaves, he goes, I can't believe I just bought a hot dog from a guy I lived with in college. Yeah, I think I got to get out of here.
Little did you know it would be foreshadowing for other things later.
Yeah, it all worked out.
When it comes to Ted Lasso, I don't quite know where to begin because we all know how successful the show has been. And to me, it hasn't just been something people needed at this time during the pandemic, just something to feel good about, but also what it does for just having groups of guys talking to, catching up at the office. I love the idea of the Diamond Dogs. I love the idea of just this show making people enjoy something in a very pure sense. You are one of the creators of this, and I know it has a very interesting beginning as well. But the meaning that it has taken on for people, I think, has been something that is really good, too. What is your favorite part, perhaps, about the bigger meaning of this show? Just giving somebody an escape, giving them a platform to talk about things in a way that I think has been really well received, and then also just the idea of being supportive in sports and being a teammate in general.
I mean, it's almost hard to say because, like, we didn't anticipate this kind of reaction, you know? Like, we just wanted to do our bits and hope that people would like it. And the fact that now it's become this thing that, like, you know, people hopefully still find funny, but then also mean stuff to them, like, that's this little ecosystem that, you know, has taken a life of its own, and we just kind of sit back and watch, you know? It's like, What's the experiment in like freshman year chemistry where like you leave a piece of grass in a jar of water and then you seal off the jar of water and then you have to come back 2 weeks later and tell the teacher what it smells like? Like that's kind of what this is, except it smells amazing as opposed to that algae I had growing in my closet for Mrs. Havlick at Kentland Academy for so long there. It's so great, you know, and particularly that like it's filtering down to kids. You know, and we're getting kids to sort of, you know, we're getting kids to tap a believe sign, you know, in the world they currently live in the way they're going to school right now. They're getting that from their teachers who are bringing these believe signs in. And like, that's just a cool thing, you know, a cool pebble to have pushed down the mountain and watch become, you know, something much cooler.
What you're trying to do on this show is not easy. From a creative perspective. And that is to be funny and to be nice, which is sometimes diametrically opposed, because a lot of times the best comedy is inherently not nice. And then to know where the line is between warmth and schmaltz. And that is a really delicate, creative place to be. And you have to, I really think, respect other people in the writer's room and know when you say a line as an actor, if it works the way it did on paper. But how can you be all those things? How can you be funny and nice and not start crossing into schmaltz?
Thanks. It is a bunch of close calls as we try not to veer too far. You mentioned the writer's room. We do have a great writer's room. And you know, everyone gets the conch, you know, I mean, Jason's energy is what rules everything. And Jason comes from sketch and improv, and in sketch and improv, you know, you take the first idea, you don't judge it. You attack it.
Yes. And right.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And so it's a room full of yes. Anding. And, you know, I'm reading Mike Nichols' biography right now. And Mike Nichols early on in his, you know, showbiz days had a no assholes policy. Oh, pardon my language for the family radio. But we've cleaned that up a touch for our world, which is again from Jason. We have a no turkeys policy. Just no turkeys. And it starts in the writer's room. And I guess I'm kind of realizing now, like once you have a no turkeys policy in the writer's room, then you just kind of start writing characters where you don't you assume that they're not turkeys either. You know, some of them might be having some, you know, long fits of turkey-ish behavior, particularly, you know, your Jamie Tartan in season one, but there's something else going on there. And I think that's kind of a Midwestern thing, you know, like you don't assume anybody is an actual horrible person. You kind of assume they're just having a bad moment and they'll figure it out later. And maybe we can help them figure it out along the way.
That's interesting because it reminds me in that particular thought process of Judd Apatow and an antagonist not being a true antagonist, where the conflicts in a story and the antagonism that drives the story doesn't necessarily come from white hats and black hats. It comes from real and internal places and difficulties. And that can be, it can be hard to write because it does have to be very real and it has to be acted with a great deal of nuance. But I think that's a sort of an aspirational thing to not necessarily have to designate heroes and villains.
Well, I think you can do white hats and black hats a lot more easily when it's 90 minutes. But, you know, we're making, you know, one season at a time, we're doing a series of 300-minute sports movies. And you got to go a little deeper than that, you know, and we knew that with the main character first, we made him deeper than the commercials were, which we couldn't have gotten away with for 300 minutes, but then it's the same with everybody else. You know, it can't just be this person sucks. It has to be, why does that person suck? And let's take a long walk down that path and figure out why. And again, still try to, you know, have the occasional fart joke or whatever to lighten the mood when appropriate.
We love those in our space, too, just saying. I also am fascinated by the idea of how Ted Lasso came to be, that the original skit is Jason Sudeikis as an American coach in London, and it's the NBC Sports Premier League broadcast where this first came to be. You talk about doing the bits. How did you end up putting this all together, starting with that?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was never the idea to do anything further than what it was, which was, you know, we got hired to go to London for 3 days to shoot this thing at Tottenham Hotspur's training academy, training center, rather. And it was really slapdash and fun. It was me, Jason Sudeikis, and Joe Kelly. We're like the three sort of, you know, first creators. And like, We didn't even have a script. We had scenarios, and we sat in our trailer and like waited for setups, and we'd go out and do the next bit. And you know, this whole English crew outside, like a top quality bunch of professionals who are not used to working with improvisers, are outside our trailer where we're just playing Catan, mind our own business, and they're all like biting their nails off, like, "What are we doing next?" Oh, sorry, because it's like, "What are we doing next?" Was more close. And yeah, we didn't think it was going to be anything more than those 3 days. So we had a blast. It was very low pressure. You know, Jason's hilarious. The outtakes are, you know, hours long of stuff that didn't even make it that Jason just killed in. And yeah, now 8 years later, we're still talking about it. And it's insane to me. I'm delighted.
Well, and I really enjoyed the second season, too. I am fully caught up, so I'm pretty proud of myself for that. And I like to see Coach Beard's character arc start to get really developed here. And I've enjoyed the relationship piece of this on his part so far. I'm looking forward to seeing where that is going. And then also trying to figure out what Coach Beard's first name is.
Everybody wants to know, including me.
Oh, come on. You have to know what his first name is.
No, I don't. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he has one. I don't know if that's his actual last name or just his role in Ted's life. We have options, but we haven't decided. So we'll decide if we have to, or we never will. You know, Seinfeld was on for 9 years, and around year eight, they decided to reveal Kramer's first name, and it was cool to know his first name, but like, I don't know that it made us enjoy Kramer more.
It is a fun bit though, because that was asked by Mike Mulligan, our morning show host, who's a huge fan of the show as well. He said, "Oh, you have to ask him his first name," and I'm like, "I'm going to try." We're still asking.
Well, I also, back to the writers' room policy of no turkeys. Immediately, I'm thinking, where have I heard that before? And it's Bears coach Matt Nagy, who, when he took the job, he called it no turds. And it's not real easy to do sometimes in an NFL locker room and when you're dealing with 53 or more of a practice squad. But that's something that's important to him. And I wonder where the crossover is. We're always looking for metaphors when we sit here 3 hours a day and talk sports. And sometimes when we start talking about teamwork and support, and it could veer into other aspects of people talk about music and giving people room. And you talk about yes, and there is some support to that of what people want to do. Have you talked to people in and around soccer, football, who have mentioned where some of these crossovers are? And you are a sports fan as well. What stands out to you about what these various processes have in common?
Well, the one that I come back to a lot is that, as I say, there's a lot of improv people in that writer's room, and we write the show in a very improv-based kind of process. And soccer is the most improvisational sport. American football is the most regimented, the most rehearsed. Like, everybody line up, take your marks, 1, 2, 3, go! And in soccer, it's all flow. You have to have good habits. You have to have systems in place. You have to have trust of where your teammates are going to be and where they're supposed to be, and that they're actually will be there for this kind of situation. But then also, like in music, because improv, we talk about improv being like jazz a lot. Like, there's room for essentially solos, moments of individual brilliance. And I kind of love that about, I like soccer for a lot of reasons, but I especially like we talk about it in season 1 where Ted says, I can't really do much coaching. All I have to do during a game is trust that they all know, that I've given them the right tools to do what they got to do. And so I love that, improv to soccer connection. Like in Chicago, especially Improv Olympic with Del Close back in the day, they talked about improv and jazz a lot, but also I don't think Del Close saw a soccer game his entire life. So I think the improv to soccer metaphor is perhaps, underattended.
Well, I know you're an Illinois State Redbird. You got to enjoy the Cubs game the other night. The reason we were able to get you on is because you have a lot of friends and family who listen to the show, so we thank them. Are you still keeping up with Chicago sports at all? Because if so, this is your time to vent. I just need you to know that.
I had that nice interview with Taylor at the game the other day, and no need to watch that online, folks, because I'm clearly overserved by that point. But the one joke I wish I'd done as I left various answers is hanging there was gone. Just looked around and be like, hey, I've been out of town for a while. Where's Javi?
That would have been savage.
He's great fun.
That would have been great.
Good luck in the rebuild, Cubs. That's I guess it's something you got to do. I don't know. There's not that much to vent about. Here's the thing. I did the seventh inning stretch, but also the White Sox were out of town. I'm a North Side child with South Side parents. Like, my mom is from Beverly. When I was born, we lived in Rogers Park. I went to high school in Hyde Park. Like, I'm one of these people who likes the Cubs and the Sox. That's just how it is. So I'm delighted with what's going on with the Sox right now. Last year, the Cubs and Sox both made the playoffs. Anytime that happens, which has only happened like twice in my life, it's fraught with terror for me. Absolutely fraught. Like, the notion that they'll play in the World Series, it would be the worst October of my life, and I really, really need that to never, never actually happen.
The best worst October.
Yep. Well, Brendan, this was a delight, and we appreciate you taking the time to do this, especially on short sleep. But this was a whole lot of fun. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for making people happy. We appreciate that, too. It's a wonderful show.
That is Brendan Hunt of Ted Lasso, Chicago native, and just a terrific dude. That was great.
Oh, that was so much fun. And it was a really good interview. Taylor posted it on her Instagram. I think you can still find it, too, but man, that was a good line.
We'll talk about his White Sox and an issue that may actually self-resolve, but there's some thoughts about what's going wrong now with Dallas Keuchel and what his role is going to be and what he can do, because it was more ugliness last night from him. So we'll talk White Sox after their loss in Oakland. That's next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
That'll be it for Keuchel. 5 2/3. Pinder left at third. Ruiz will come in when we come back. Curve into left. 5-1 Oakland. So 5 2/3, five runs for Dallas tonight.
In my mind, I've gotten myself into a rut, especially the last four starts now, even though I felt really, really good tonight. I mean, my past 8-9 starts have not been very, very good at all as a cumulative whole. But as a starting pitcher, I think any point in time, you can either get in a really good groove or you can kind of sink yourself.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Now, too much sinking himself for the moment for that man, Dallas Keuchel. As we do the occasional FIP check, we will compare and contrast the earned run average with the fielder independent pitching that measures on a similar scale the things for which a pitcher is responsible. ERA of 5.33, fielder independent pitching of 5.27. So the peripherals are telling us that what we are seeing is what we are seeing.
And even though that three-game stretch was slightly mitigated with the game last night, and at least we didn't see it in the first inning, it hasn't been good. In fact, over 12 starts since July started, 7.32 ERA and 13 home runs in 59 innings. That's the one that concerns me as much as the FIP. It's, you don't need to worry about your fielders when the ball's out of the ballpark.
Correct. If it's going over their head and into the seats, the fielders aren't involved. He has given you 145 in the third inning. So at the end of this, if in fact the White Sox do get their staff healthy and end up succeeding, just having done that obviously does have some value. But guys aren't chasing his pitches. He's not getting guys to reach. And no less a pitching expert than Steve Stone was asked directly about Keuchel's struggles. He was on yesterday with Lawrence.
I think Dallas has said it's a flaw in his mechanics. He's not a hard thrower. I'm not saying he has to throw any harder. What I think is maybe just staying back over the back leg a little bit longer and pushing off the mound to kind of attack that cutter, because the cutter's gotten lazy, and because it's gotten lazy, he's not getting it inside to the right-handers, and because he's not getting the cutter inside to the right-handers, it doesn't really open up that outside part of the plate. Then, because of the mechanical flaw, he's missing on the outside part of the plate with his fastball and his straight change. So he falls behind. And, you know, when you have supreme confidence in your stuff, you don't go from 0-2 to 3-2 on a regular basis, and that's exactly what Dallas is doing. He gets ahead of a lot of hitters, and then he goes and runs the count out full. He misses, it's a walk. Or he just gets behind 2-0, and now you got to make a pretty good pitch with less than overwhelming stuff, and they hit it awfully hard. When Dallas was at his Cy Young Award best, when he was dominating hitters in the American League for quite some time, he was doing it by getting ahead of just about everybody, taking advantage of a good sinker. He still can throw a lot of ground balls, but you can't run counts full, and you can't keep getting behind hitters as much as he has.
Can't confirm with Keuchel. I'd never seen anybody over that stretch who, if he needed a double play ball, could get it any easier. That was the bread and butter ever since he got to the big leagues.
That's late movement on stuff. That's getting guys to roll over stuff. But, man, Stoney, that is really specific. Talking about, you know, where the, you know, body position on the mound and how to attack the cutter a little bit. Like, even we saw it with Lester. We saw when Lester lost his stuff and he was laboring through. He still could be effective in those much smaller margins for error, but you can't lose your aggressiveness.
No, and unfortunately, the earned runs were similar to what we've seen out of this last stretch of his last four starts, and I really think that that's kind of where this began, the one on the 21st against the Rays, and then the next one being Crosstown, then Kansas City, and then this most recent one, but at least it's a step in the right direction for him after having one inning and then three innings to at least go 5 2/3. If you need something to be positive about, that was it, and I think he started better, to say the absolute least, yesterday.
I think what Stone mentioned about the cutter inside to righties is important because it sets up, obviously, the out pitches with the changeup that's sort of just floating on the outer third of the plate, and you have the arm side run with his fastball.
That changeup, too, got turned on yesterday. That was the bugaboo yesterday.
I think it's such a difference maker if you can manipulate both sides of the plate, especially as a lefty attacking right-handed hitters, and the cutter's not working. Then you're sort of just left on an island. We see that with Kyle Hendricks sometimes You know, you don't rely on velocity, but location and movement, I think it sort of applies here. That was really good from Stone.
Agreed, Mike Rankin. Agreed. Now, I think the question is just how do you manage him moving forward in this last couple of weeks?
Because innings. You just hope he keeps you in games enough to give you innings, and then you keep him off the playoff roster.
At least five innings out of him. And unless there's a remarkable difference in what we've seen off from the opposing offense and the opposing batting average, I don't know how what you do with him in the playoffs. He's not a starter. I don't think because of the potential for error in the bullpen, I don't know that that's the right place for him.
Unless he's forced into action because these other guys end up more hurt than
don't
we understand.
It. Don't say it.
Well, I'm still, believe it or not, listen to me, I'm still optimistic about the White Sox pitching health. I think a lot of this is maintenance. I think this is load management. I think they're doing exactly what we advised that they do. I think we'd know it if some of this were serious. It's scale of nervousness, Rodon would be the one I'd be most worried about.
Yes.
And then maybe Giolito because hamstrings are finicky.
Especially that he's so tall.
And then maybe Lance Lynn. But to have any number of concerns is not good. But these are not Bears concerns. Because with the Bears, I know the anvil's going to land on my head. I know that the Bears are already hurt and football seasons only get worse. They're all about entropy. Everybody ends up hurt.
So are you welcoming Danny to the dark side? Is that what happened yesterday?
I'm not in a position to do that. He brought himself over there and planted his flag there. And his reasons are different, but I respect his rationale. I respect his reasons. I just personally can't do what he's doing.
And you planted some nice grass around that flag, and then you put some flowers in there, maybe a little white picket fence.
It's starting to sound like a cemetery.
No.
No.
Just, supporting the flag.
Do you have a flag? We will do the Midday Midway next. And I'm going to play a game we like to play in this segment. Is this irony?
Ooh. More famous people talking about Javi Baez on the show today. Why not?
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Boy, it's already been a show so far as we reach the Midday Midway. Ian Happ was great. Brendan Hunt, Coach Beard on Ted Lasso was wonderful as always. He was even on Twitch with us as we broadcast live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we had some White Sox talk in there also. And lamenting that the Bears are hurt already. Ugh! Damn it.
We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, where Dan is reacting to Bears injuries.
They're hurt already!
This is edition 345 of our show out of infinity. But it's good that we're getting this out now. So we just had Brendan Hunt on with a ridiculously good line about Javi Baez, and I'm glad that we could be there for him. That interview with Taylor was a lot of fun, and I did not realize that he had been having some social sparklers, but good for him. It looks like he had a lovely time at the Cubs game, and let's face it, we've all been like that at Cubs games. Not that I'm saying it's me. Maybe it's been me. But Jerry Seinfeld, a.k.a. Jerry from Queens, called into WFAN Steve Summers' show and also had thoughts. Let's listen in.
But I really love Javi Baez. I have always loved Javi Baez. He's been the guy I've always wanted on the team. And I know he's a free swinger, but he's been doing great. And I like his interviews. He reminds me of a Tony Montana in his post-game interviews. He's kind of a sexy villain.
Yeah.
I like his little haircut. I like his whole... This is a guy who's one of the most... I don't like over-the-top guys who style it too much. This guy's style I just love.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. He got into a little bit of trouble and got out of it immediately.
But... I didn't go for any of that nonsense either. I agree with him. Don't boo the home team. Don't boo your Mets. You're lucky you have a team that you can love. And if they don't perform well, that's fine. There are a couple of situations where I would say I can countenance a boo. I would a boo, to me, if a guy doesn't run out a pop up or something like a ground ball that he thinks is going to be an out and it, and maybe the first baseman drops the ball, I would boo that because that's lack of effort. I would boo. But underperforming, I think, is absolutely wrong, and I agreed with him. Do not boo the home team. I'm against it. I know people pay a lot of money for the tickets.
Right.
I know, you know, it's a big deal to go to a baseball game, and that people. This is our team. Support the team. We're all frustrated and disappointed at various things. You know what they're booing? They're booing their frustrations they have in their own life. And they come to the ballpark and they expect the team to take their mind off of that and to win where perhaps they have had something that's bothering them.
Okay.
And that's where the booing, they're booing themselves, if you ask me.
That got real existential.
Yeah, Jerry from Queens. But, wow.
And you know what I thought? Because 670 The Score Meatball has made me. I'm like, would Dan have gotten mad at the booing take if he didn't know it was Jerry Seinfeld and it was Jerry from Queens?
No, I've said the same thing. That when I go to a game, the only thing that I think it's okay to, if somebody's lazy, if somebody's stupid, if somebody doesn't have their head in the game, I tend to agree with them on that. But that's different than when I'm sitting on my couch watching Bears games. Because I'm not actually there. They can't hear me.
That's true. I do yell at the TV a lot, but you know how I feel about the team booing the opposing pitcher throwing to first. I just think it's crowd.
It makes no sense.
It's crowd trash talk.
He's allowed to throw over. But he's just keeping the runner close.
But the beauty of it is it's not even personal. Like, it's just, you're on the mound and you don't play for us.
I know, but I don't know when it started. It just doesn't make any sense.
That is my favorite. Also, I think.
It's your favorite because it bothers me.
No, it's not. It's not that. No, it's my favorite because it's silly and it's not personal and it's a way to boo.
Well, I mean, you could go. You could boo the hot dog vendor if you want. You could go.
No, that's
boo
personal.
If you want.
Like
okay.
This is just, hey, you play for the other team. This is a thing you do. Boo.
Yes, it's a thing your pitchers do too, though.
And that's not the point.
But okay, I'll never understand it. Is
where's Jerry from Queens?
This irony.
Ooh.
I will tell you this. Whatever it is, it's awesome. This from the BBC. When Spanish Bishop Javier Novell resigned last month, the Roman Catholic Church cited strictly personal reasons without going into detail. It has now emerged in Spanish media that Javier Novell fell in love with a woman who writes satanic-tinged erotic fiction.
What?
Just you
specific?
Wait. Sit back, relax, and strap it down. In 2010, at the age of 41, he became Spain's youngest bishop in Solsona, the northeast region of Catalonia. He has backed so-called conversion therapy for gay people and carried out exorcisms. Seen as a rising star in Spain's Catholic Church, his decision to resign with the Vatican's approval came as a surprise last month. He is said to have met several times with Vatican officials as well as the Pope himself. Javier Novell was traditional in his remarks on abortion, but his strident views on homosexuality and outspoken support for Catalonian independence were controversial. It came as a shock when Religion Digital reported that he had fallen for divorcee Silvia Cabal.
Divorcee? Is that
right? A psychologist and erotic novelist. That's what she is. Maybe the church frowns upon it. I don't know.
I also like how they put Catalonian independence and the,
right.
the anti-homosexuals the same,
same
level
thing.
Of take here.
Right.
No.
The news site said the former bishop was now looking for a job in the Barcelona area as an agronomist. Caballol's books include titles such as, these aren't like the Zobrist books, by the way.
Aren't they?
Such as The Hell of Gabriel's Lust. And the trilogy Amnesia. In the blurb for one of her works, the reader is promised a journey into sadism, madness, and lust, and a struggle between good and evil, God and Satan, with a plot to shake one's values and religious beliefs.
Sounds like my Thursday night.
Neither the ex-bishop, who's now 52, nor the novelist have responded to reports, although Religion Digital quoted him as saying, "I have fallen in love and want to do things properly." The diocese has since responded by emphasizing the corroboration or not of the story is a strictly personal matter for him alone. The issue has again raised the issue of celibacy within the church. In earlier interviews, Javier Novell admitted that in his youth, he had fallen in love with an 18-year-old girl and he wanted to marry and have children before deciding on a different path. His change of heart has prompted grumblings within the church. Dominican nun Lucia Caram said he was out of his mind and criticized his promotion of conversion therapy. Now, the latest on this story, because now I've been checking out other outlets, there are other people within the church that now believe he's possessed and needs to be exorcised.
So you're telling me that the guy who's accusing others of being the thing is actually the thing again.
He may be the thing, but now there are other priests who think he needs an exorcism because he is possessed by the devil or a demon. And maybe it's like those of us who've seen The Exorcist multiple times at the end when Father Damien Karras is grabbing Reagan McNeil, who was possessed by the locust demon Pazuzu, and says, "Come into me, take me, take me." And you see the demon jump into him and he casts himself out the window and down the Georgetown staircase to his death, where his last rites are administered. That maybe that's what happened. Maybe that's what's going on with Javier Novell, that in one of these exorcisms, he dared the demon to come into him, and that has forced him to pursue this woman who creates satanic, erotic fiction. Or at least that's
well.
As a religious person, I'm very skeptical about the being possessed by the devil thing. Maybe that's just me personally, and I also don't believe in conversion therapy. But as far as this whole turnabout is fair play and I'm accusing you of the thing that I actually am, I do believe in that. I believe that is a common tactic that we fall for on an everyday basis. So, is it ironic?
It would be different if he were gay, right?
Yeah,
if he left the church to say, "Look, I'm marrying a man, that's it." That's different. We've got any number of those versions of stories of congressmen and senators and state legislators and how many televangelists. Like, that's an old garden variety trope at this point. This one's a little different.
Is it irony? I'm going to say no.
You can withhold judgment. You can wait to see how it pans out. There's going to be more.
I will also say this, since we're asking. Alanis Morissette's song.
Not irony.
At all!
No.
I hate it. But always hated it.
And now it's ironic. Like even like the comedy about it has become ironic.
Rain on Your Wedding Day is just a mere coincidence. It's not ironic. There's nothing ironic about it.
It's like, things that suck.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And self-fulfilling prophecy with the guy in the plane crash. But no, not ironic. I don't know if it's irony or not. I'm going to say no. I'm just going to, because it's all like very around itself.
That's the Midday Midway. That leads us to in-depth Bears and NFL talk. The season begins tonight. A game you can hear on Sports Radio 670. The 44-year-old Tom Brady takes on the Dallas Cowboys. It was pointed out earlier by Stonecutter on email. Tom Brady is 6 years older than Duncan Keith.
Isn't it ironic? No, it's not ironic. Nope, it's just an interesting fact.
Heron is next on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Yeah. host a local event, and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the pitch, hit, and run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.